All right, so good afternoon. It is October 30th, 2024. Happy early Halloween, everybody. Welcome to the Security in 45 show, where we cover a new security topic every month in 45 minutes or less. We've got a Halloween-themed presentation today on the spookiest of topics, Cisco Secure Access. With us, we've got two award-winning guests returning for their second appearance on the show, David the Ghost Keller and Justin Plants vs. Zombies Murphy. For those that are doing the audio playback and you can't see the video, you have no idea what I'm talking about. Andres, let me kick it over to you.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you guys for being here. Well, welcome to the show. We're super excited. We're going to talk about secure access today. This is, I guess, from our perspective, is something that we're seeing definitely a lot more and a lot more with our customers, partners, and everybody inside of Cisco. It's just a lot of crazy information and a lot of technologies that we're just putting together into one place. But hey, that's what we're going to be talking today. This is our round number two on secure access. We do have new questions. We have more information that we can that we're going to find out today from our guests. And I guess let's kick it off.
Yeah, and we had Justin and David. Welcome back. We had you guys back last October on the show, and that was a great, Secure Access was newer then, and it was great to see Cisco bringing a lot of security technologies into kind of one dashboard. So we're excited to hear a little bit about the updates. Andres, I just do want to point out you look almost identical to Harry Potter. I keep thinking you are Harry Potter there. And David, with the background and the transparency, you got that. Also, I will point out Justin Murphy made that Plants vs. Zombies on the back while they're out of old school paper mache. So kudos to that. I thought I was being cool with my fireman outfit, but well, guys, October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. At Cisco, we talk about if it's connected, it's protected. Justin, I'll give this first one to you, or David, whoever wants to take this first one, but describe what we're actually connecting into secure access.
Sure. So the idea is to connect everything to anything that it needs to connect to, right? So we're talking about end users, we're talking about IoT, we're talking about mobile devices, all connecting to web apps, RDP, anything that they need to get to on the other end, whether it's SaaS in your own private data centers or in public cloud, right? So there are a lot of different mechanisms that we've talked about in, to make this happen, right? Whether it's VPN or ZTA, and some of the underlying protocols like IPsec and Quick and Mask and all of that, we've been connecting them since our last conversation, but we've advanced more as we go through, whether it's auth methods, including like Radius, and some cert-based auth enhancements, as well as just so that we know who they are and are able to get users in a lot of cases connected more smoothly, right? In the case of cert-based auth, or to make the transition smoother in the case of Radius. If you're used to on-prem Radius-based auth for your VPN, users can or admin can configure that and have that run up and running much quicker than maybe moving to a SAML solution, right? So that's where we're going. There's a lot more enhancements there with our IPsec tunnels and our resource connectors, I believe, weren't out at that point either, which helps get you that app connectivity over ZTA. But I'll pass it over to David or Mike if you want me to dig deeper into any of those things, I can.
So for those that missed the first webinar and haven't seen Secure Access from Cisco, there's two primary use cases when we're talking about connecting to secure access. And to preface, Secure Access is Cisco's Security Services Edge solution, which would be cloud-hosted security services. So from a use case perspective, we're talking about internet access and private access, where private access would be, being able to utilize resources that are hosted internally, which would be those that you'd have access to if you're traditionally on network or connected via remote access VPN. So when Justin's talking about the connectivity methods, he's referring to different ways to either connect to secure access to get access to either those internet or private resources, and then the means in which Secure Access connects back to your network, either via tunnel or that resource connector. And then, of course, on top of that, the different security services and kind of how those services are delivered can vary. But yeah, it's all about connectivity.
That's cool. And certainly about the flexibility as well. It's certainly an overarching kind of product where you can connect in through different methods, roaming users, on-prem sites. You guys already mentioned like the network tunnel, which is, you know, an IPsec tunnel versus that, you know, resource connector. But yeah, connecting anything to everything
and
solution.
I think we're going to talk on this a little bit later as well, but it sounds like there's a lot with Secure Access, but the overarching goal and the direction that Cisco is going in general from a strategy perspective is to kind of move towards simplicity. And so the end users don't have to really think about how they're connecting to those resources. The administrators have flexibility, but there's not like a ton of different steps. And there's no like fixed cookie cutter way to deploy it where you have to do one thing or the other. You can do, if you just want to have secure private access initially, you know, there's ways to set that up, and maybe you only need the ZTA, either client-based or clientless, and the resource connector. Maybe use the tunnel if you want to have remote access VPN. There's a lot of different ways to set that up. And it all is just geared toward flexibility and then simplicity.
That's great information. And thank you for that, David. I actually wanted to ask another question that it's in everybody's minds today, and it's the security aspect, and probably just, you know, diving deep into the actual product, into Secure Access. What are the security features that you guys see? And I guess this won't be for you, David, or Jason, Justin, if you wanna take on that. But what exactly does the Zero Trust Access mean in this product?
Yeah. So from a security perspective, there's a handful of ways you can really break it down. Start with the Zero Trust. That is, I always think of it in terms of private access, but it can apply to internet access as well, because there are policies you can set based on user identity for what people can access on the internet. So you could consider that as being tied to Zero Trust, because you're minimizing how much a user can access based on their role or function or whatever else you want to break it down by. It can also be tied to the private access, though, and that's what I typically think of. And that's where we're looking at, you know, not only is the user who they say they are, and with Secure Access, you can bring your own, you know, identity provider for SAML. You can use Radius or cert-based authentication for remote access VPN. You can add MFA. So if you were to use something like Duo for, you know, SSO, you could have MFA there. And then for each of the connection methods, there are, you know, varying posture controls you can use. So is this user on a version of an operating system that we want to allow access to this resource, or are they super out of date and, you know, that's too high of a risk and we don't want to allow access with that, you know? So it's minimizing both based on, you know, who the user is, but then also on additional factors related to risk. And there are, of course, other things we're looking at in the future that I don't know if we can talk about today, but we're constantly looking for ways to increase how much visibility we have into that risk and offering ways to control it.
Yeah, and go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to mention from the other security side, there's, of course, a lot of the same security controls that we had from, you know, the Umbrella Security Internet Gateway, which were rebuilt for purpose for secure access inside the secure access environments, that are offering, you know, things like the DNS security, the Secure Web Gateway, which of course has, you know, full decryption, file analysis, sandboxing, remote browser isolation, file type controls. There's the firewall as a service component to it, data loss prevention. There's all kinds of other controls that can be utilized depending on the traffic flow and the policy that's being set.
Excellent. Just to expand on that a little bit, all of those controls that David's talking about, Secure Access is taking an approach of simplicity, as he mentioned earlier, where it's a unified policy. So you don't have to worry about what the tool is, whether it's the firewall, the proxy, DNS, what's controlling that. You just configure what you want to happen, who you want to have access to what, and what the action needs to be, and what sort of inspection needs to happen, and all of that happens in the background. It is good to be aware of kind of how all of that works. However, you don't have to be. You're just creating a flow of who gets to what and what action happens in between, in order for all of those pieces to occur. And then just to dig a little deeper into some enhancements that we've made since our last conversation, one of them is in the secure private access realm, where before we were just sort of, hey, you are either allowed or not allowed to get to this based on your posture or user identity. Now we're actually putting with IPS, and now we're actually putting some proxy capabilities in line where we can analyze and block file types as well as malicious files trying to be uploaded to maybe some local file stores or things like that, so that we can catch them on the way in or out of your file store, right? So those types of things are being added in, and that'll continue to be enhanced with more capabilities like DLP and some of the things that you're used to on the secure internet access side. And with the secure internet access side, actually, DLP has come a long way, right? So with data loss prevention, we started out with just sort of standard categories that were based on
Data classifiers
libraries.
and
Classifiers and everything that were already predetermined, and you could make some regex entries and things like that. But now we've gone to being able to see to categorizing AI type destinations, being able to upload like exact data match and index data match type files, so that you can have a lot more flexibility there. And then beyond that, we've actually implemented some AI to analyze things like IRS forms and other types of standard forms that we can train an AI to recognize, so that you don't have to try to match something on the actual document itself. It's going to intelligently figure out, okay, this is very close to what I've seen before, right? And it could be a combination of factors depending on what form it is, right? So there's a lot of enhancements continuously going in there. The final one that I've seen was OCR, right? So now, if the text is in an image, whether it's PDF, JPEG, and several other formats, we can pull that out and be able to recognize, hey, that's a credit card number. We need to block that from going up to this third-party file share site, right? So there's a lot of enhancements going into that security pathway that we're using in secure access on both sides of the internet and private access.
And to tie back to the policy a little bit as well, not only is it a single policy stack where it's intent-based, it's based on, user action destination and then the controls you want to have in place with it. But Cisco's going a step further and adding, an AI assistant that will eventually be uniform across multiple things in this, Cisco security stack as we get into things that I don't know if they're fully out yet. But it's going a step further to help, administrators see kind of what's being utilized, where's the redundancy, where can I place a rule, change a rule, what will the impact of a rule be? So not only can you block something, but you can also make sure that you are doing the thing that you want to be doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely coming to secure access. You may have seen some of those features in the Cisco Secure Firewall. They've been implemented there and more comprehensively today, but we're definitely working on all aspects actually of the dashboard, not just policy, but also experience insights and things like that, which we'll probably get into a little bit later, to be able to analyze reporting and logs and user experience so that we know, so that we can help administrators understand how their users are accessing applications, how their policies are being used, and where there may be redundancies or inefficiencies.
And I'm a little bit of a fraud because I always forget this, and it's an important part of security. But in availability is like one of the three aspects of the CIA triad. Because I'm lazy, Justin, would you mind talking a little bit about experienced insights and how that would relate to, availability and experience for end users and how an administrator could leverage those?
Sure. So with Experience Insights, we've taken our capabilities within ThousandEyes and integrated them into Secure Access. So it's all within the Secure Access dashboard and integrates with the secure client that you deploy to your users, the same one that you use for VPN and ZTA. And what it does is it runs two standard tests from those clients, right? So it'll check and make sure that, hey, if they're using WebEx or they're using some other video conferencing software, what their experience is there, what delay jitter over time. So you're able to see whether or not they're having a good experience on conversations like this webinar, as well as other internal meetings. And then you're able to also see what their experience is at to secure access with a with one of our standard tests as well. So are they able to get to their closest secure access data center? And is there a particular amount of delay there? On top of that, monitoring the resources on the device. So right now we're showing summary information about CPU utilization, what their network experiences is, or configuration is, whether it's 1 gig, 100 meg, whatever, on their device itself. And so you can start seeing where, with a map, you can start seeing a delay, where the delay might be occurring, where they might be having issues. Are they overutilizing their memory because they have too many tabs open, things like that, which would lead to a poor experience. In the future, we're actually going to be able to show, and actually not too far in the future, so I can talk about it, we're going to be able to show what specific processes are being utilized on that device. So you would more in-depth information on what exactly is going on to help troubleshoot if somebody calls in and say, "Hey, I'm having an issue," or to proactively interact with users if you want to go and say, "Hey, you need to reboot your machine," or, "You need to do this or that to help if you're having issues," right? And then we're also monitoring the delay between our cloud and common cloud services based on every single region. So you'll know when your users call in from the East Coast of US, or if they're calling in from somewhere in Europe, "Hey, it looks like secure access is having great response time from Google or bad response time from Google in this particular region." So you kind of know what could be the issue, right? And there's a lot to talk about here, David. The final thing, though, that I'll mention is that we did add custom tests to the repertoire, I guess, of experience insights, which gives you the ability to say, "Okay, I want to make sure that X users can get to this application," and you define the application by domain name or IP address and give it a port number, and you can do a full network map of that user's access to that application real time and set it to occur continuously as you need it, so that you can know and have historical data on exactly if that user's having issues, when they have issues, where they are when they have issues, how they're connected, all of that information with the full path, so that you can monitor either C-suite devices, or you can monitor somebody who's constantly calling in and saying, "Hey, I can't get to Salesforce," or, "I can't get to X app." Now you can have real data over time to say, "Okay, yeah, when you're at Starbucks, it doesn't work very well. You go work from home or whatever," right? So you can have a lot more data to be able to tell what's going on, as opposed to the internet's down and the limited information that you have on those remote users today.
So secure access being an all-in-one connect kind of connectivity solution, security on top of it, and then it can also diagnose a lot of troubleshooting, like end user experience. You mentioned even monitoring resources on the local computer, which could be the root cause of the experience that they are going through. That's great. Yeah.
Absolutely. Go
I mean,
ahead,
we can
Drew.
try to build connectivity, but if the end user doesn't have,
Yeah.
a path to it, like it doesn't matter how
Right.
secure it is, they can't get
Right.
to it. So,
Right.
you got all ports there.
And I know tomorrow we're doing the live demo, so that'll I think everyone's gonna really love seeing that experience insight. So I'm glad you brought that up, David. All right, so back in 1999, 25 years ago, there's a quote, "The worst enemy of security is complexity." And then that quote goes on to say, "This has been true since the beginning of computers and is likely to be true for the foreseeable future." So related to that quote, I know Secure Access has a strong focus on that simplicity from the administrator experience, as well as the end user experience. We talk about a frictionless user experience. Can you talk a little bit about how Secure Access makes life less complex? Maybe just a minute for both the users and maybe the SecOps teams.
Sure, I'll talk about it from the admin and the SecOps side, and David, I'll pass it over to you to talk about the end user experience. And
I'll just
I
ramble.
take it that way. All right. So From a connectivity standpoint, basically being able to define applications one time and not have to revisit how they're being accessed is key, right? So normally you have a bunch of different tools if they're accessing via VPN versus on-prem versus some other access method. So you have to create new application definitions, new rules that from an admin standpoint is simplified in secure access, where you define it once, you say how it's going to be accessed, and then you determine who can access that application and what the criteria is. When you're talking about connectivity, we provide a couple different methods, right? So we make redundancy just built in, just a no-brainer within secure access by creating network tunnel groups, right? So you connect up to regions, and each region has two availability zones. Those availability zones are completely separated physically from each other so that you can have connectivity, you can build redundant tunnels that can fail over in case there is something that happens on our side or on your side, so or on the far side at the data center rather, so that you do have that redundancy. But we can make, but we make that simple and easy. Every time you build one, you get all the information you need to make that connectivity happen and build those tunnels and share routes via BGP. We do have some more flexibility there in depending on your connectivity method and what your needs are. With different tunnel types, but we may dive deeper into that a little bit later if we have time. But way, because I really want to get to resource connectors. Resource connectors really simplify the way you connect up, because the way those work is they're an all-in-one virtual appliance that we actually can run in Azure, AWS, or ESXi on VMware today. And we have a containerized version as well as GCP coming very shortly. Where you basically deploy this all-in-one virtual appliance, configure it up with an IP address, put it on a subnet, and it checks in to secure access, builds its own tunnel, and basically creates a pathway through your network to your applications without needing to change firewall rules, without needing to change routes or share anything. You just say, hey, this application needs to be accessed via this resource connector group, because we do deploy them in groups. So the redundancy again is built in, as well as load balancing and everything else. Once you have that connectivity in place, users can connect to that application that you're allowing through the platform. And so, David, I'll let you address the user experience on that.
Before we go to David, real quick, the resource connector, that's really cool. So I don't even have to build a, I've got some on-prem location. I don't even need to manually build an IPsec network tunnel into this. Resource connector will expose the applications I want to give my users access to.
Absolutely. And with the way it's designed, actually, it not only gives you those benefits, but also if you have an acquisition or poor IP management, you have duplicate IPs across parts of your network, the resource connector can obfuscate all of that from both the end user side and the application side. So you no longer have to worry about what the IP addresses are on both ends. You can connect it up regardless.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I would really say it's in line with Cisco's overall strategy with security, looking toward simplicity and like the administrator experience, right? I think the overarching vision with Cisco is that we will become a platform ecosystem where you import or set up objects like once, and you can use those across everything, right? So I mean, today you'd have to do a directory sync with firewall. You'd have to do one with secure access. You'd have to do one with Duo. You'd have to do one, with all aspects, like every single layer, and then have objects created for each that you then have to reference within the policies. I think the overarching goal is that you'll be able to have all the objects that you use across all of them. You'll be able to set a policy, and that policy be implemented at each layer that it made sense to apply that, which is what we currently have today with secure access when it comes to the DNS, the firewall traffic, the web gateway, private access and internet access, where you set the one rule for either internet or private, and it applies that. From a end user perspective, I mean, remote access VPN is great for a lot of things. It's still a better option for certain applications or certain tasks you're trying to do. But there can be a lot of friction for end users with remote access VPN. It can be generally annoying. Even myself, right? I can get aggravated and having to hop on VPN, access something, and then I want to drop off it afterwards, and whatever. It's just kind of annoying. With secure access from the end user perspective, there'll be a separate module, and it's still using, Secure Client, which is a rebranding from AnyConnect. The AnyConnect VPN component has been changed into the name of the specific VPN module, and then there's a separate, Zero Trust Access module that would be used for the client-based access. You would, enroll and authenticate at the interval determined by the administrator within the dashboard, and then it does the rest, right? So that can be weekly, it could be whatever they set. And then when I go to build that connection, it's going to dynamically build a per session tunnel using Quicken Mask, which Justin talked about earlier, to secure access. And it's going to do the posture check, and it's going to build that gap. Policies can be checked. Am I allowed access? If not, I'm not going to be allowed. And then, of course, the traffic can be encrypted and inspected with the other security controls. So it's all with the goal of end users not having to choose how they're connecting. They log into the device, they enroll, and then they just access things they need to for work. And the posture controls, the security, all that's applied without the end user having to do anything. And from an administrative perspective, it's trying to make it as easy as possible with the intent-based policy, the AI, common resources they can leverage within the Secure Access dashboard, future vision across multiple things. So really trying to get that direction. Now, I will say, as an engineer myself, engineer in air quotes, again, for those who don't know, my background's in exercise and sports science, and that doesn't really play that much of a part in this role. But complexity to me long felt like job security, because if things were complex, you had to have me. You can't just replace me. And so when the move to simplify things like introducing GUI instead of CLI, and now with AI, I've first experienced a little bit of concern about, maybe my role will be seen as redundant, or I'll be kind of exited out. But there's still going to be the need to have, design, decision making, how things should need to be implemented, best practice for that implementation. And I think it's making an opportunity where, as engineer, I can become less of a, fully tactical resource, and then become more strategic, more toward the business. How can I, on the, engineering or security team, enable the business? And instead of having to spend all my time, dealing with nerd knobs and, how am I going to deploy this thing and read through 100 pages of documentation to do it, and then break it and do it again, and then break it again, and spend weeknights and stuff just crying in the corner. I'll instead be able to have an easier deployment, reach those outcomes that we're looking to achieve, and be involved in bigger things than just, turning dials. So it feels like an opportunity to do more and to do it better. Not only that, but it's also helping balance out the number of tools. Like, I feel like no one talks about it, but, like, in my opinion, back in the day when you first started networking, it was, you had a handful of devices on the network. You had phones connected to switches, and then you had a computer connected to the phone, and, like, it was like layer two. You had VLANs you had to worry about. You had voice VLANs. Like, it's a different game out there these days, So having these additional things trying to make it simpler and easier to use offsets that, because now there's dozens of tools you have to leverage, and it's not just, a firewall in your network you have to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. Just real quick, that makes you write an enabler instead of a blocker in a lot of these types of applications and types of business needs, right? And so that I don't know that I've ever been on a team where we've been able to do every project that was put forth to us. Not that we didn't want to, but we just didn't have time. So this simplification definitely gives you that time to be able to address some of the some of those additional asks, and be able to think about what your, again, what your business needs and security needs are, and make sure that those are in alignment, as opposed to just putting out fires and trying to just manage the complexity always.
Yeah, this definitely talks like really good about simplification and all the things that that can be just made easier. I know we talked a little bit about the resource connectors and also the way that the users connect to the solutions. It very removes some of the friction, and we've seen that, and we're gonna see some of that tomorrow just on the demo. But the other question that I have, and this one, it's kind of interesting. This is kind of like a report that we saw back in 2022. It's a Gartner survey that showed 75% of organizations are pursuing security vendor consolidation. And I'm pretty sure a lot of you on on this webinar have heard about that, have seen that. And we're thinking that a lot that number is gonna grow with time, and then customers are already seeing the benefit, and that's one of the things that we have with for example, secure access. But if you don't mind, I think David, you're next. What are the products that you think it's gonna help customers replace or consolidate with secure access?
So I mean, as far as cloud hosted security services go, there's a lot of stuff that you get within the single dashboard. There is DNS layer security, again, building off what we had with Umbrella, formerly OpenDNS. We have the Secure Web Gateway from Umbrella as well that's been added. So that's full proxy. You have, traffic decryption, including TLS 1.3. You have file analysis, you have sandboxing using Secure Analytics. You have, formerly ThreatGrid, and then file analysis is through advanced malware protection, but there's also, I think, some other file scanning with AV, but I digress. You have DLP, both out of band using API for SaaS applications. I think there's like seven now, as well as cloud malware detection, again, using the same API for the same applications, where it is able to look at files that are being hosted on the cloud storage. So you have out of band CASB controls there, as well as real time or inline DLP that's in line with the web proxy. So we can look at, files that are being uploaded. We're able to look at web forms that are being, put in post on web pages, for the different data classifiers that are in identifiers that, Justin talked about earlier. We have the firewall as a service, which has layer three, layer four, and layer seven controls, as well as IDS and IPS using Snort 3. You have remote access controls. So you have the remote access VPN as a service where you can use secure access as the head end instead of having a head end on premise. And then you can provide backhaul connectivity to, any device that can pretty much build an IPsec tunnel to us, in addition to the ZTA. And with the ZTA, we have both client-based using the ZTA module that can, any, in most cases, client to server application that can leverage it. And then you have browser-based, which today is web applications, but they're expanding that very shortly. I'll let Justin talk on that if we're able to. Am I missing anything? Oh, experience monitoring. So you have the ThousandEyes endpoint component. You have all the reporting that's in there, both from a security perspective, from an app discovery perspective. All of that can be pulled into like, a SIEM or a SOAR. You have an S3 bucket you can use either from Cisco or you can bring your own. So you can ingest all of that there. Anything else?
So I will just add the roaming module in case there's devices that you want to have that continuous DNS and SWG or web proxy analysis going on. So there's a lot of different pieces together. And what all of this means is that now if you have branches that you used to have to manage decryption or put larger boxes in because you needed local security on, now you can build tunnels up to secure access and have a smaller box and just and have a unified policy. You may not have been able to across your distributed firewalls, proxies, VPN services, have a single place to configure, single policy, so we can consolidate all of those things and replace the need for the hardware replacement in case of and management in the case of like VPNs and proxies and things like that. Instead, now just provide a method, whether it's well, again, whether it's an edge device like a Catalyst ISR, whether it's a firewall connected up to us and or a resource connector out of your ESXi host, and you don't and everything else is taken care of in the cloud and you just worry about policy and what is best for your business again, so that you don't have to decide on new hardware every year and figure out all the different pieces on what you're trying to support at the different sites and having a disconnected experience for your users.
Yeah. And tied to the intent-based policy aspect, right? You have all those controls, but when you set like the internet access rule and you say, David cannot access YouTube, right? That action will be taken wherever the traffic's seen. So if we see a DNS request for, you know, trying to resolve YouTube.com, we're going to block it. If we were to see, you know, layer three, layer four traffic related to it, we can take an action on it. If we were to see web traffic related to it, we can take an action on it. And so you're not having to choose the layer with which you want to apply that. It's going to do that for you. And then, of course, in the reporting, you can see where the action was taken itself, based on just, you know, breaking it down.
That's a great point. In the intent-based policy, you guys are talking about that unified policy. I just put it in the policy. I don't need to worry about like where this is happening in the network or at what layer. So,
right.
I mean, message on simplicity there. Now, AWS is where Secure Access lives, right?
Well, yes,
so,
no.
So that's actually changing. We will continue to stay in AWS, and that is a long-term plan to continue to leverage their network, right? Because AWS does have a lot of peering relationships. We can add those to our peering relationships, and we can stand up in different regions very quickly through AWS, but we also don't want to be completely reliant on a single public cloud. So actually just this last week, we announced that we're in four new data centers that are our own edge data centers, right? So the reason we're in four is because we're in two regions. We stood up US East and US West first. So we're in places like LA and San Jose and Reston and I think DC. And so those are our data centers, they're our hardware, they're our hypervisor, everything, but it's still the same secure access on the top layer. So we've been able to create the ability to have a generalized version of our cloud security platform to be anywhere, right? And we can manage just a single deployment so that we can keep everything up to date and sync. There's not going to be a difference in service between one cloud versus or one region versus the other. Everything's going to continue to be seamless and you don't have to worry about where you need to connect up. We handle that distribution and we're going to continue to move through our edge data centers throughout the year. The plan is to have around 12 more. So if you think about how quick that is compared to some of the other cloud solutions, even Umbrella, when we were just trying to deploy that and we were talking to customers like, hey, we need this in this region, it would take us a year or more to get even just a couple data centers stood up. So we're rapidly expanding our footprint across both AWS and our edge data centers. And you may see us in other public clouds in the future. I'll leave it at that for now. And so there's a lot of big things to come. We're very flexible and can provide that connectivity and redundancy wherever users are.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that actually resonates with a lot of our customers and just, you know, that we are the ones doing it also. So that's pretty cool to hear about.
So it's the Cisco cloud, I'm just going to call it.
Exactly. The world is hybrid, so we are too, right? Whether you're a worker or your cloud, you're hybrid.
That's so true. Cool. Now, I do have another thing that if David or you, Justin, can talk a little bit about, and this is about SSL decryption. I was talking to a customer last week about this precisely a few days ago, and they wanted to understand a little bit more of how we do the SSL decryption, if anything, with secure access. And if you guys don't mind going over just the highlight details, that would be awesome.
I mean, so I can't tell you exactly how we do it on the back end because it's proprietary, but I can say there's two aspects to it. Today, the firewall layer three, layer four decryption is global across the dash. So if you enable it, it's decrypted everywhere. And then for the web traffic, we can determine per policy that's set or per rule within the policy stack where you want to have it enabled. And so once you have it enabled, there's also the aspect of choosing what to not decrypt. And so by default, it's going to be everything. And then you can choose to selectively not decrypt specific destinations. And so often that would be things like healthcare or finance. Sometimes you might see like social media, web email. It really comes down to the organization and where they are located will kind of inform what they can decrypt and look at. And then also the vertical, right? If you're healthcare or a bank or something, you probably want to decrypt that because you care about PHI being exfiltrated, and that's something you want to have visibility into. But you can choose to not decrypt certain traffic and after you set that component.
And just to add to that, the functionality aspect is we do fully decrypt TLS 1.3 today. And with decryption within the web proxy, that gives to give us a lot of advanced capabilities to be able to block Facebook Messenger and not just all of Facebook, or block different aspects of an application. Hey, you can get to Dropbox and download, but you can't upload to it, right? So you have some more advanced controls, and we handle the scalability. So whether it's decryption in our IPS or in the web proxy, or even connecting up VPN users when everybody all of a sudden works from home, right? We handle that scalability in our cloud. The admin no longer has to worry about, we had 50 users going to this page yesterday and it was getting decrypted. Today we have 5,000, right? Or we had 50 users working from home, now we have 5,000. Secure Access will dynamically expand and scale to be able to handle that traffic, handle that decryption, and you no longer have to worry about your boxes turning over or a poor user experience just because your traffic flows and destinations have changed.
Yeah, and go ahead, David. Go ahead.
I was going to say that's an aspect I hadn't actually considered in my answer, was that as the quantity of internet traffic that's encrypted increases, and the need for decrypting that traffic for inspection, because if you don't know what's inside it, you don't know if it's malicious or not. And I know, like Firepower, there's methods to get visibility into encrypted traffic without having to decrypt it. But I've seen a lot of organizations will leverage Secure Access for internet access for branch sites or even their main sites, and offload that web decryption to Secure Access rather than enabling it on the registered device. Even going a step past what you might see with a branch where they want to bring your own SD-WAN to make a Secure Access Service Edge solution where you have both the the networking and the security side, and you're wanting to offer security services for that branch without having to add a firewall online or enable it on an edge device, now you can also offload decryption to Secure Access, and it does that scalability that or offers that scalability that Justin mentioned.
Yeah, and we have to talk about that because, Google says 95% of the traffic it sees is encrypted. So you can write all the great policies in the world that you want, and they can be bypassed by very common encryption otherwise. So I think that's a really important point that we talked about.
And I think part of the reason why both Justin and I have mentioned that specifically that we support TLS 1.3 is, for those that aren't familiar with the TLS standards, with TLS 1.2 and below, the server name indicator, which could be seen, or SNI, which could be seen in the earlier, handshakes for establishing, the TLS, encryption for the session with the web server, you could see the SNI. And so you could see the destination the end user was communicating with, even without decryption. And so when I reach out to the web server for Facebook, you would know that I'm communicating with Facebook. And so you could have like content level controls without having to decrypt. With TLS 1.3, that entire payload is encrypted. And so you no longer have that visibility unless you're decrypting it or you're doing some of the fun stuff that, Cisco does with the encrypted visibility engine that I'm not going to tell you how we do because I have a mortgage.
Well, that's awesome. But no, that's great. The encrypted conversation just comes up more and more because that's what most traffic is. We didn't have this conversation 10 years ago when everything was clear text. Okay, so guys, great conversation today. I have so many more questions I want to ask you guys, but for the sake of time, Andres should probably get into the Halloween questions at this time. I'll take the first one. David, I'll ask you this. If you could pick one candy when you go trick-or-treating that you don't want to get, what would it be?
Oh, a candy that I do not want to get. Oh, geez. I never liked the candy that was in like the wrapped plastic because it just felt less sanitary. You know, I was a fat kid, so I still ate it, but I didn't really like it as much because it just seems like, you know.
Yeah.
But
so
yeah.
What about like a Tootsie Roll or something? You're not talking about that, but like a.
Yeah. Like Tootsie Roll.
Like, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Like the bag of popcorn somebody made. Like.
Because someone totally could unwrap it, do something, and then put it back.
Like, yeah, yeah. Like yeah, sometimes I can buy that candy at like the store and like some of them are wrapped in a bag by accident. Like I don't want to like accidentally get like your fingerprints in my candy, you know?
Yes.
Those are the ones that we used to eat.
I like the ones where I can like press on the bag and it still has the air seal. I'm like, this still has the air seal.
Yeah.
No one wants to open this. All right. I thought maybe you were going to say the candy corn thing. I know a lot of people.
I was a fat kid, man. I love the candy corn. It was just strange shit, dude. It was like, there's a reason why I had weight problems, you know? Like, it was delicious. I have to tell you.
There's a huge debate on that one.
I've seen that.
Yes.
Or whether candy corn's good or not, I haven't seen that, but I can imagine, yeah.
Cool. I do have the next one. And this one's simple. And for you, Justin. So, classic movie monster, which one would you want to be and why? Dracula or werewolf? Or if you have another one, that would be nice too.
I'm glad you gave me a choice because there's. Go ahead, David.
Oh, I just wanted to make sure we verify. Like Nosferatu Dracula or like, you know, Dracula where you have like the big cowl and the suit?
Right. I guess that would go into my reasons, right? Like,
yeah.
I wanted to be like interviewing with the vampire or something like that.
Exactly. Now, Justin, you already do kind of have the werewolf thing going.
Yeah, no, I was going to say werewolf, but just because I like to go hiking and go on adventures, and it seems like having some of those werewolf powers would allow me to get to places that I can't get to today.
You wouldn't have to hike anymore. You could just jump tree to tree.
Exactly. Exactly.
So true.
Well, it's been a great conversation, guys. Let me kick it over to you guys real quick for any closing remarks, Justin and David, that you may have. David, I know you have a secure access, some stuff up on YouTube, but anything you want to wrap it up with from your personal viewpoint?
Yeah. If you're interested in seeing me give an overview on secure access, check out my channel. I think it's Decrypt-Ed is the channel name. I think it's at security-decrypted or maybe. You can tell I'm active on it. Keep an eye on secure access. I mean, it's a SaaS solution. Cisco is doing a ton to, you know, add features and function to all their, you know, SaaS, especially the security ones. There's a lot of stuff on the roadmap, all of it moving real quick. So if there's something that you want to see secure access doing or able to do, there's a decent chance it might get added in the next like couple months even. So, you know, reach out to whoever you're engaged with the Cisco side, talk to them, look at what's being posted online. Like it's moving fast.
And Justin, I know we'll definitely see you on the demo tomorrow.
Yes.
But for today's conversation, any closing remarks that you have?
Sure. Yeah. No, I'll just echo what David said is as far as like secure access is moving fast. You're going to see a lot of things coming for clientless ZTA very shortly. You're going to see a lot of things coming in the way of ICE integrations. Some of them are already there today that we didn't get to get into. You're going to see a lot of enhancements in our ability to check the health of identities, even if you're familiar with how Duo and some of our identity health is working, and be able to apply policy and do a lot of very exciting things to get closer to that zero trust sort of ideal, right? Because zero trust is really a framework. It's really a journey, and nobody's all the way there yet. And I don't know if we ever will be, but we're going to start picking at all of the things, right? We need to trust the device. We need to trust the user. We need to know more about what the user's doing. We need to know more about what that device is doing so that we know that they are not just can they access it, but should they access that application from that device as that user, or should we make more check them additionally, right? Give them a little bit more of a push to figure out whether they are who they say they are and things like that. So all of it's continuing to develop. There's been a couple announcements over the last 2 weeks. There's going to be more announcements towards the beginning of November, and then every quarter we're coming up with a lot of new stuff. So stay tuned.
Okay, great stuff. I know, Andres. For me, I the zero trust access in general, being able to have this solution that's giving me the flexibility on how I'm going to connect in remotely or on-prem, and then having that connected. You know, we talked about Cisco being the plumber, and I don't have to worry about all the piping behind the scenes. Just keeping that simplistic approach. You know, complexity is the enemy of security, and this is I think a good product to showcase that. The tools, the consolidation, a lot of stuff being consolidated. David, you were talking about components of Umbrella, we're talking about Duo, we're talking about IPS stuff. So just again, further simplifying all that into the one dashboard. I don't know what you thought, Andres.
Yeah, on my mind, the benefits of being on AWS and what we're doing right now with our own data centers, that's, I guess we were not expecting that one. So it is going to be developing in the future, and that's pretty cool. The SSL decryption, that, thank you, David, for that explanation. That actually gives us a lot of information to share with our customers. And the new developments on DLP are also another thing that it's really cool. And I know I was thinking about the user experience, the visibility that we have on that, the user's computer, the connectivity, all those things, those are pretty new and super impressive. So if you have the chance to take a look at Secure Access, I recommend you just going for it. And it's a lot of stuff that we're doing into it.
Good stuff. Well, Justin, David, appreciate you guys joining us today. Great conversation. We'll all be tuning in tomorrow, noon Eastern, for the live demo of Secure Access. Get see the dashboard, see the, you know, experience insights, I think will be pretty cool, as well as anything else you want to show there, Justin. So stay secure, everybody, and we will see you on the next episode.
Thank you all.
It's been great.
Take care, y'all.